What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar, and we're doing something a little special this week. We're not recording on a live stream or over the Internet, even. I'm actually here in person with Sam Chapman, one of our new reporters who's focused on security. Hey, Sam, how's it going?
Going great, Dev. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We're lucky enough. You know, we have not done like a retreat at Engadget for a long time. Honestly, I've been here for 10 years. It's been a while since there's been like a big meetup for a whole bunch of Engadget people. So we're like having some sessions and just like charting out strategy for the sites and kind of what we're doing. But also, this is a great chance to see people for the first time. I've never met Sam in person, and including some other people working on the site. So we're having a fun time over here. I want to talk about what Sam's working on. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We'd love to answer your questions. And also, those could be a part of our Ask Engadget column. So check that out as well, or just keep that in mind. I'd love to answer some of your questions, and certainly people on staff will as well. We're trying to do live streams Thursday mornings. We've missed it for the past couple of weeks just because of timings and schedules and whatnot. But keep an eye out Thursday mornings on our YouTube channel. You'll see if we're doing a stream or not. Okay, Sam, tell us, who are you? What is your experience? And what are you doing at Engadget?
My name's Sam Chapman. I am a new senior writer for Engadget. I joined to help us move into the security space, reviewing products, starting with VPNs, hopefully eventually moving into antivirus, password manager, data removal, and scrubbing, and just that whole suite of products. My background, not actually technical. I have a writing background. I learned this stuff on the job, I say my expertise comes from being lied to pretty much repeatedly for about 6 or 7 years by the internet. And when you do that, when you read enough of the half-truths and exaggerations and creative marketing representations, shall we say, that these companies do.
Specifically VPN companies you're thinking of?
Specifically VPN companies. I mean, there are a lot of them that are much better at talking than they are at building software.
Yeah.
VPNs in particular seem to have an extremely low barrier for entry and are also a product that a lot of people are going to use without being deeply versed in the technology behind them, because, you know, I just need it once a year to watch Eurovision or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that Engadget chose to move into that space, both because it's important information to communicate and because I like working here.
Yeah.
I mean, this office is ridiculous. I was looking for the bathroom and I found a full-on news studio.
Don't walk into Yahoo News live streaming or live recording their podcasts. It's great to have you here, Sam, and great to have you on staff, because I do think security is something we have not had the expertise to follow up on for a while. But also, I don't think news sites are doing it really well. When I worked in IT, that was one of those things that I just kind of had to like hammer into people. Like, this was back in the Windows XP days. So get your antivirus up. Be careful what you open. Just be really careful. And since then, VPNs have become very popular as a way mainly to see stuff on other streaming sites or get access to things that you can't on your current web. And I've noticed that they all have really fanciful marketing claims. It's really hard to tell like if they're as good as they say they are. So you're doing VPN reviews. What has your experience been so far? Because you've done a couple for us. Can you tell us like what has your favorite one been so far?
Okay, so I've only reviewed a couple so far, as we've been, you know, working on getting the testing procedure down. But I have reviewed ExpressVPN and ProtonVPN, and we have one for NordVPN dropping pretty soon. All of those, I would say, are ones that more or less do live up to the claims. I mean, ExpressVPN and NordVPN in particular are, they dump a lot into advertising, influencer partnerships and stuff. And I think, frankly, that is self-defeating because it makes them look less trustworthy and you know, focused on a smokescreen when they actually do have very good products. I would say, as a person, the ones that I recommend to friends and family are Proton, specifically because of its nonprofit ownership and transparency, including about the places that it cannot protect you. I like being open about that. Mm-hmm. And Movad, if you are actually using a VPN to try to be anonymous, because it is the only one where if you choose, you can give them no information forever. I mean, you can literally send cash in an envelope to Sweden to buy a subscription to this VPN.
Why you just, ever would you want to do
that? Don't
get
better than that. Because you don't want to leave a paper trail.
That's true.
I mean, the number of people for whom that is a risk is pretty low, but I appreciate that someone's out there looking out for that long tail.
I mean, yeah, I've definitely talked to people who are like that concerned about their privacy, so I totally get it. I'm looking at your Proton VPN review right now. Proton's a really interesting company, right? Because they also do the mail, the private mail client. And if you subscribe to that, you also get Proton VPN. So it's kind of, you get a lot of stuff for their subscription.
You do, yeah. Proton Mail was actually their first product. So the VPN came second. Now they're doing Calendar, Drive, a wallet for crypto, and the pricing is actually such that if you need two of those six things that they do, then that is actually a good deal.
Yeah. So I've been checking out Proton Mail just because it's I've been looking to get myself away out of the Google ecosystem, and having an alternative to Gmail would be nice. Proton Mail, just there. I don't know if you've looked at the mail stuff in particular. Like, can you give us a sense of is that as secure as they're saying it is?
Yeah, I have actually used it for, you know, just abundance of caution coordinating some protest stuff over the last few years.
Right.
And it's a good, the interface, I mean, is you'll be able to use it immediately if you know Gmail or Outlook. As far as your question about how secure it is, so everything that you actually write in the emails is end-to-end encrypted. Nobody can retrieve that except your intended recipient. Proton cannot intercept it in transit. The thing that is not secure is your IP address revealing that you have used Proton Mail. Mm-hmm. And in the past, Proton has been unable to avoid handing some of that information over to police. They only cooperate with the Swiss police, but Switzerland cooperates with other police through Interpol. And to their credit, Proton is very open about this. They're like, if you, you know, you cannot use our service to do infinite crime. Like, we are going to protect you under the principles of security, but there is no real way to send someone an email without their IP address being saved somewhere. So the fact that you've used it, that might be found and used against you in court. But the emails themselves are safe, which is reassuring, I think. It's got to know its limits.
Definitely. So, okay. So your thumbs up on Proton Mail and thumbs up on Proton VPN.
Yes.
It was funny because I was just looking at, like, what are the sort of, like, private email options right now? And, hey, you get a VPN, too. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty nice thing to have. So can you give us a sense, Sam, like, what else are you working on? What kind of stories are you looking to dive into, you know, over the next few weeks and months?
Sure. So a little while ago, I'm actually happy that you mentioned that some of the stuff that you were dealing with in this space is the same as what you were talking about when Windows XP was the new hotness. And that lets me get on to the idea that most of the security advice is pretty evergreen. I mean, as fast as tech moves, it's amazing how similar this stuff is year to year to year. You know, don't use easily guessable passwords. Use a password manager to store them all behind one. Use two-factor authentication. Don't click weird links. Don't open weird emails. You hear about all of this stuff, like quantum computing is going to make all of our encryption algorithms obsolete.
Sure.
And like most cyber attacks happen because somebody made a mistake.
Yeah.
That an encryption algorithm could not have helped with.
It's the social engineering that
often
is the thing. I was telling you the story, like when I was working in IT, this was like probably 2004, 2005-ish, there was one big, I couldn't figure out what the worm was called, but there was one big one that like crippled networks as soon as it was opened. And somebody had sent an email to my IT coworker and they didn't scan it. And I think they were like prepping to get it into a scanning app or something. And they double clicked it and it executed on their system. And like within 10 seconds, flooding from their system, took out the network. I forget which XP worm that was, but it was not fun. And then it was wild that it was IT that was patient zero, basically, for the site. So they had to get fixed. We had to, like, you know, shut down the network for a while and clean up computers, but not a fun time. It is the same problems over and over again. But also, at least it's not as bad as it was, because Windows XP was such a just such an open wound for things to like come in and get infected. Like Microsoft is trying better with Windows 11. I'll talk about Windows 10, some stuff they're doing too. And Macs, there are definitely security issues with Macs, but not as much anymore. Do you think like antivirus is still a thing people should be thinking about? Because 20 years ago, yes, you definitely needed antivirus on your computer, or your computer would like, you know, catch on fire very quickly.
Yeah, I would say it is still worth using an antivirus, just because it, you know, it helps you with a Swiss cheese approach to cybersecurity. If you're ever not sure about a file or a message or something that you've received, it can scan. Antiviruses can scan the files. They can put them in sandboxes. Mm-hmm. They can pick them apart, destroy them if needed. And an antivirus can also do a regular scan of your system and tell you if you've got anything running in the background that shouldn't be. Often, ransomware, for example, likes mm-hmm. to disguise itself as something that looks like a root file that your system would be running and should be running. So antivirus can catch those things that are just a little bit off.
Is that something Windows Defender, like Windows built-in antivirus, isn't that doing most of that right now?
The built-in ones are pretty good, yeah. Really, the reason to go with a different one at this point, like Norton, say, is whether it's packaging something else. Like we were talking about Proton saving money on getting more than one of those at once. Windows Defender is good, but you know, you're not getting, say, the level of VPN service that you would get from Norton Secure VPN and if you have a Mac, as you mentioned, Mac does not have anything built in that is doing that good a job. So Mac users and iOS users, I would recommend specifically, should get a standalone antivirus.
Even for iOS. Now, that's interesting because Apple is all about, like, they have private internet relay and stuff like that. Like, they have their built-in VPN, but also, are there worms? Are there anything that we're actually worried about hitting iPhones?
I mean, there
like Android
is
a hellscape.
So yeah. Android is a nightmare. I mean, yeah. Apple, comparatively, and I mean, that has always been the story, is, you know, Macs don't get viruses. That is not true just because of how much the two, you know, streams have grown together over the years. Like if you can execute a weird file that you open from a shifty email attachment, if that can execute on Windows, almost always it can execute on Mac as well.
Yeah.
Ransomware is made to spread between, you know, network computers, even if they're running different OSs. So this is just a basic basic security precaution that I really do recommend everybody take.
Gotcha. And I feel like there's probably also a difference if you're maybe a high-level target, if you're an executive at a company, if you're somebody who maybe has access to more interesting information or potentially valuable information. I feel like that would make you a bigger target, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's called whaling, is like fishing for the biggest targets, where one is the whole attack. It's good that you mentioned that, actually, because another thing I'm thinking about right now is in the wake of the bombing of Iran by Israel and subsequently by the United States.
We have last recorded the podcast, the United States is now at war, even though they say we're not at war. What a strange situation we're in right now.
Yeah,
go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, no, it's strange. And because of the strangeness of the situation, I think that there's a lot of things that people are worried about right now, and a lot of responsibility that we in the media have and are largely abdicating to tell people what is actually worth being afraid of. And I, following the story, I know that the initial attacks pretty much crippled Iran's ability to rapidly respond on a military level. And so among their other options for retaliating is with cyber attacks. And you mentioning that executives, it reminded me that I... Part of my mission is to inform, you know, you as the average user of a personal computer in any OS that you are probably not at risk from a nation state level cyber attack.
Yeah.
That these are going to be targeting large organizations, large corporations, targets that would be noticed, that would cause material harm, you know, military targets, basically, as opposed to civilians.
Especially, like, we've talked about, there's been sort of like a cold cyber war going on between the U.S. and China for a while now, like over like basically two decades at this point. Mm-hmm. That stuff can hit infrastructure. That stuff can hit things that still affect normal people, even if it's not, you know, your computer being attacked. Is there anything on the radar that people are worried about right now getting hit, like power infrastructure or something else?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any particular cyber attack capabilities that Iran is thought to be wielding at the moment. What I do know is that anything that they could throw at us, you know, whoever it's targeted at, can defend themselves by the exact same advice that we were just talking about. Like, mm-hmm. you need to not have easily guessable passwords. You need to not respond to phishing attacks.
yeah.
2021, the Colonial Pipeline attack that took down gas delivery infrastructure for most of the Eastern Seaboard, that was because basically somebody's password was 12345 is how that was able to happen. You know, movies give us this image of, like, cyberpunk hackers tapping away on these incredibly complicated mainframes, saying stuff like, ah, they're throwing up firewalls now, this is getting interesting. But mm-hmm. like most cyber attacks, you know, just like most art thefts, just like most crime really, is very boring and easily foiled if you take a couple of steps to make yourself a harder target.
For sure. It's sort of like, I feel like I walk around the world just seeing potential threats like this too. Like I was on the subway last night heading to a screen of Megan 2.0, which I'll mm-hmm. talk about in a bit. I saw a guy put his phone in his back pocket.
Mm.
And I was like, I've seen this happen before, too, where it's like New York, you're standing by the door. Somebody snatches your phone and gets out the door, like as soon as the door closes. I've seen it happen many times. I've warned people about this, especially like it's often women who do it because their front pockets are not as big.
Of course.
But I did, as I was leaving the train, I was like, hey, man, your phone is a very big target right there. Just watch out. And he'd not considered putting it anywhere else. So, yeah, I don't know. It's maybe a little tough to butt into things, but I do kind of try to take that extra step to help people protect their tech.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think you were completely right to do that. You know, you see something, say something. There was a guy for a while who was, you know, he'd put on super innocuous clothes and he'd go to bars in, I think, Minneapolis and hang around until he saw someone unlock their phone.
Yeah.
And then he'd grab the phone and run, and he already had the code to unlock it.
Yeah.
So it's not paranoia. It's just common sense. It could happen anywhere.
Was he like capturing the unlock code too? He was like watching them unlock it, or?
Yeah. It was a completely tech-free attack.
Yeah.
He'd see them. And then once he had the phone, he had the code. They didn't have 2FA, so he could just do whatever he wanted with their bank accounts then. And
good
did.
God.
Yeah, he confessed all of this later. He's in prison now. That's how we know.
Yeah, pro tip, enable biometrics on everything except if you're going to protest. That is the other thing. Like, I was doing some prep for the recent protests that were happening across America. And one good thing people tell you is actually disable biometrics, because police can force you to use biometrics to unlock your phone, but they cannot force you to do the passcode. So there's that, right?
It's absolutely true. I mean, I'd say the best thing you can do is not bring your phone at all, but
sure.
I understand that some people need it to coordinate or find their way.
Yeah.
So you're right. The second best thing you can do is turn those biometrics off.
Gotcha. Anything else you want to mention, Sam, that you're working on or would like to work on? Because I feel like security is such a broad topic and such an important one, and we just don't think about it very often these days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still getting into what the full scope of my role at Engadget is going to be, and I'm really excited to be here and be able to figure that out with this great team. But for now, I'd say you don't need to be afraid any more than you do, you know, on the internet, than any more than you do walking around the streets of your own city. You know, if you are smart, if you are aware of the threats, you can live, you know, the fullest online life you want. You know, don't let the marketing make you scared of going outside.
Gotcha. Thanks. And I, kind of related to security, I wrote up this new story this week about Microsoft kind of giving us more details about the Windows 10 Extended Security Update Program, the ESU. So they're kind of in a weird spot right now. Microsoft is planning to fully shut down support for Windows 10 in October, on October 14th, 2025. But they announced last year that they're kind of throwing Windows users a bone, or Windows 10 users a bone. Last year they announced for $30 you can buy a year of extended security updates. So that includes bug fixes, critical stuff, critical security updates. So you could keep using Windows 10 and feel like you're still secure. This week they announced you can also use 1,000 Microsoft reward points to do that. So Sam, I'm sure you have Microsoft reward points. We've all been earning them. When you do certain Bing searches and stuff, you earn them. When you buy stuff on the Microsoft Store, the Xbox Store, you sometimes earn them too. So there's a good chance a lot of people have 1,000 reward points. And if they're using Windows 10, they could at least get this extra security update for a bit. I feel like this is a thing we should probably cover at some point too, but Windows 10 right now, is it a security risk to still continue to be running Windows 10 when Windows 11 has been out for several years now?
So I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not going to talk about something that I haven't fully researched. Just my immediate impressions on this is one of the most important things that you can do for security is always upgrade the instant that the upgrade is available. Right. And that goes for big updates like one OS to another and the tiny updates that your computer asks you about, can I do it while you're asleep? Because outdated software that doesn't have bug fixes in yet or that isn't supported is like a hole in a wall for your security. Tons of things get in through unpatched software. Because often the patches are for exploits that the bad guys already know about. Mm-hmm. So they know the hole is there. If you don't fill it in, they're going to come right into your house. But my immediate impression is like, this, like gating this behind a paywall, even for reward points, is a potential security nightmare. Because what are they going to do for people who can't pay? They're just going to be sitting around.
Well, they're telling them upgrade. Like, that's the thing. And what I've noticed in the PC industry right now is that a lot of the companies, Dell, everybody, they're like, oh man, Windows 10 is ending. I guess you need a new computer. Because a lot of people, if you're running Windows 10, you're likely running an old computer at this point, too. So Windows 11 famously also had all these requirements to be upgraded. Like you needed there was a certain security chip you needed. I'm actually not sure if that's still required to get Windows 11, but I need to double check on that. But it was like a big pain to upgrade a while ago. A lot of people stuck with Windows 10 because that was actually a pretty solid update from like, what was it, 2015, 2014? Mm-hmm. It was a pretty solid update and it was a nice move away from Windows 8. Which was that whole spin on like trying to do a tablet OS thing. I covered Windows 8. I reviewed Windows 8, and that was kind of a big misstep for Microsoft because they didn't understand tablets and they couldn't force Windows to be a tablet thing. So Windows 10 was like, hey, start menus back. It's a nice, stable OS. A lot of people just didn't want to move away from it. Windows 11, I reviewed that as well. Like the main thing was they just like sanded away the rough edges of Windows. Like it's a little easier to use. It's like a little more calming, almost like meditative. That's where they made the default of the taskbar in the center. Like your icons go in the center of the taskbar. They also didn't give you like title names of apps and windows and stuff. And I found that to be a real pain when I initially reviewed Windows 11. They walked that all back. So you can put the title bars back on. You can ungroup your windows and stuff. I think they turned the taskbar a little bit like the Mac OS dock, which I hate. When it comes to Windows management, unfortunately, the Mac dock is something I hate. Apple has given us expose and hot corners and all these ways to like interact with it, but I still hate the fact that you have to like right click into a window into a dock icon to see the multiple windows in that application. You don't have to do that in Windows. In Windows 11, you just have to like enable that ungrouping. But anyway, to me, that was the big thing. Microsoft is saying, Windows 11 has better security, potentially more AI features. I believe there's better support for DirectX as well for newer games. So there are a bunch of good reasons to update to Windows 11. They're not going to stop you from using Windows 10. But for the people that do continue to use it, you could spend a little bit, spend your reward points or $30 to have another year of security updates. And then after that, I think you're just sore out of luck. I think you're just kind of coasting. They did say that Microsoft 365 apps and also Windows Defender, the critical security updates, those are still going to go to Windows 10 until 2028. So that is something. I think Microsoft is just trying to make this as painless as possible for people. But, if you're on Windows 10 right now, it may be time to either consider upgrading or consider getting a new computer because you don't want to stay on an old OS for too long, I think.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. And I know how much it can be annoying to have to keep doing this and to download updates, which might make your computer,
yeah,
you know, out of commission for a little while. But like it really is a thing that you've got to do. Like I said, it bothers me a lot that Windows is marketing this to be a special perk or anything at all, because it would be like new Toyota being like, now with seatbelts as an extra add-on.
Well, before, consumers could not even buy these ESUs. These used to be just for commercial customers who were like, hey, we're not moving from this version of Windows because our entire software stack is built around it. So Microsoft was like, okay, we will give you more security updates if you pay for it. This is the first time they're actually bringing that to consumers. So that's a step forward for them, I guess. But, you know, you're Microsoft. It's like, at some point, it's really hard to force people to move on from your operating systems. I guess we'll see how that goes. If you're still using Windows 10 and you don't want to budge, let us know. podcast@engadget.com. Drop us an email. All right, let's move on. And hey, I only have this room for another 10 minutes, so we're going to wrap quickly here, Sam. Let's move on to some pop culture picks for the week. And I want to point out, hey, I saw Megan 2.0, the killer android is back. And I saw, what's funny is that I had a screen for this as soon as I landed in New York, so it's always nice to have a full schedule here. But I saw it with Mr. Anthony Ha, who's over at TechCrunch, and I freaking loved it. I liked the first Megan. It was a really fun, kind of campy horror movie. This one is fun, campy action movie. And it's just kind of hilarious to see them make the turn here. The director is Gerard Johnstone, who directed the first, I believe, and also he wrote this one. Akilah Cooper, who wrote the first movie, also has a story credit on this one. And they basically did Terminator 2, which is kind of funny. So, like, in the first movie, Megan is the villain. Megan is the murdering toy robot. Her programming's to, you know, protect her child companion at all costs, but that sometimes involves murder. And now there's another robot, and she's more dangerous, and she wants to, you know, unleash AI that will take over the world, because that seems like it's the plot line of the year at this point. And the only one who can stop her is Megan. So now Megan is essentially a good guy partner that we don't know if we can fully trust versus a much badder, bigger robot. And it's cool. Like, this movie leans into the campiness of the premise. I think it's just, like, hilarious. It's funny. The action is also good. Gerard Johnstone, clearly a connoisseur of schlocky action, because there are some great Steven Seagal references in this movie. Sometimes direct references, too, which is kind of funny. Also, I think he reads Engadget, or he reads tech sites, because there's a Section 230 joke in this movie that comes out of nowhere that I think me and Anthony were the only ones in the audience laughing at that. The story is also about tech ethics and people trying to prevent the spread of new technology. What is funny is that, the main character of the first movie, Allison Williams' character Gemma, who created Megan, now in this movie, she's like, oh no, big tech bad. Maybe too much tech is bad for us because I created a killer robot. In the real world, that has happened. Like, people like Tristan Harris and other people who have worked at big tech companies have now kind of turned the other side, and now they're anti-tech, or they're like tech critics in some fashion too. So I don't know if this hits you in any way, Sam, but I think this movie's fantastic. Have you seen the first one?
I have not seen either, because I'm not super into horror movies, but it sounds like they kind of did
Megan's fun.
An Alien Aliens thing, like first one's horror, second one's action.
They did Alien Aliens sort of. Yeah, you're right about that. It's Alien Aliens and also Terminator 1 and Terminator 2.
Seems much more Terminator.
Yeah, where the first one, the robot is the villain, and then the second one, the surprise is, oh, you need the robot, the big bad robot, to fight another robot. So that's basically it. I have to say, too, like, I wrote up a review for Engadget. What is funny is that this movie handles the idea of AI takeover or evil AI so much better than the last Mission Impossible movie, The Final Reckoning, which built up this entire premise that there was also an evil AI that was going to take over the world. Those people, the director, Christopher McQuarrie, had no clue about technology or AI or how to talk about it. It was just a big, bad villain that's just bad. Whereas in this movie, Megan, I think, understands the tech world. There are some, deep references to Xerox PARC in here that I will not spoil too much, but it's just like the people who are into technology, the people who read sites like Engadget, I think you will find a lot to love about Megan. Also, It's funny. It's campy. The action is really good, too. There are a lot of, like, hand-to-hand fight scenes. I feel like they wanted to outdo Mission Impossible in some scenes. Like, Megan puts on a wingsuit to infiltrate a tech lab at some point. It's fun. This movie knows exactly how silly it is, and it just leans into it. So I love Megan 2.0. And briefly, I also reviewed F1 for Engadget as well. That's Apple's new blockbuster that's going to be hitting theaters, starring Brad Pitt. Read my review about that as well. They essentially remade Top Gun Maverick, except with fast cars instead of fast planes. You've got Brad Pitt instead of Tom Cruise. You've got an old expert who's kind of washed up trying to come in and save a group of youngins. Kind of the same concept. I think F1 is a lot of fun if you turn off your brain. That's going to be in theater soon as well, and certainly on Apple TV Plus soon. Sam, anything that you've been watching, reading, listening to that you want to shout out?
So my wife and I just started streaming the French series Lupin on Netflix.
Lupin's so good.
It's an older one, but I've been into the old stories for a while. Found them through Persona 5, so I'm like a three-step pop culture trek here. But yeah, it uses Omar Sy's the lead. He's fantastic. He uses his kind of invisibility as a black Senegalese man in France to commit crimes, and it's an amazing updating of the theme, because the whole thing with Lupin is, he has no face. You never know who could be him. Mm-hmm. And in this one, he's the person that you're never gonna, that your eyes just slide over. And so it feels like it is really exploring some very deep political things, you know, without coming off as preachy in the slightest. You know, the heist action is great. And on the flight over here, all the way from Portland, listening to Robert Jackson Bennett's The Tainted Cup, fantasy murder mystery,
yeah,
absolute popcorn, fantastic.
Awesome. Well, Sam, it was great having you. Where can people find you on the internet these days?
You can find me on Engadget, of course, as Sam Chapman. I'm also at samuelpchapman.wordpress.com, which is a personal blog, and I've got some short fiction in Beneath Ceaseless Skies, online literary magazine, which has some amazing content by lots of authors you've probably heard of, and also me.
Very cool. Can you say the name? What's that site again?
Beneath Ceaseless Skies.
Okay, that's a great name.
.com. Yeah, no, it's excellent.
Awesome. Are you on social media anywhere at this point?
I am not, in fact, although I'm looking to change that.
Blue Sky is where it is.
Blue Sky is the one, yeah.
It has a great tech community, and also there's definitely a whole bunch of security folks there, too. They're really interesting that I follow. So, yeah, Sam, thank you so much for joining us, and yeah, hope to have you back on soon, okay?
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap for the show this week, folks. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Ellman. You can find me online at Devendra on Blue Sky and, you know, all over social media. I also podcast about movies and TV at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at podcastinggadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. Thanks, folks. We're out.